Greetings, dear friends, and welcome to a brand new episode of Shakespeare Approves of This Podcast. I am your friendly neighborhood Shakespeare, and this is my podcast. On this episode, we have Ophelia's Looking Glass, the sister act duo of Jessica and Jennifer Lawrence. I'm so very pleased to have them here. We recorded this episode at a Barnes & Noble, so we were surrounded by coffee and books and Kindles and random Harry Potter paraphernalia, as it should be. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. That might work, actually. Say a couple more words.
Winter of discontent.
It really is, because we are in upstate New York, so it is a winter of discontent. And if you want to talk about Buffy during this, if like this entire episode just simply becomes us talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I love that.
I'm okay with that.
I'm definitely more... That'd
be epic. I mean, like, it would be weird because we wouldn't be talking about you. We'd just be talking about Buffy.
No, Buffy on Wednesdays. No, this was actually a story my mom was like, no, Buffy on Wednesdays.
Get in a little closer here.
We were in trouble, and my mom's like, you can't watch Buffy, and no Buffy on Wednesdays.
So just to be clear, this isn't continuing at the moment, because you two are in your 20s, right?
Yes.
So your mom isn't still saying, no Buffy on Wednesdays for you. Because that would be weird. All right.
So she jumps out and... jumps into our dreams.
Yes, she does.
Our nightmares, visions. So she is.
Let me see. It's been over 10 years since that show ended. So, oh God, no, it's been longer. It's been like 15. Oh my God, I feel old.
I love that it's still mortal and yeah. And it seems like
yeah.
It's rampant on you.
Except when you look at the phones, when they bring out the phone. I feel certain that at some point they pull out a flip phone or something, and it's like in the latter half of the run. Now this is me trying to remember back 15 years ago.
I think they.
Oh my God.
I know they actually have one of the old phones that are attached.
Oh yeah, the landline.
She rips it off. He rips it apart.
Oh my goodness. So would you say that you are major Buffy fans?
Oh yes. Aficionados.
All right. And did you ever go to a Buffy convention?
No, unfortunately. I would definitely be alacritous to do that. That would definitely be an adventure.
That would be amazing.
It would be the opportunity presented itself.
Oh, my God. So there is...
She has dressed up as Faith before. So.
Really? You've dressed up as Faith? Did you wear a wig or dye your hair?
I just had my regular hair, but I have a wig now that I have a dark wig, so I could do that now. So I did Jessica Jones last year, so now I could actually wear the dark wig for Faith. So I just kind of did like a red-headed version of Faith with the pants and the white tank top. And
that's fun.
I used to have like this long pencil that looked like a steak.
Did you go about saying 5x5 all the time?
Of course, yeah. People 5x5.
And then everybody just kind of like, what does that even mean?
Five by what?
It's like
five by what? 5x5.
It's like, I know your Faith, but it never made sense when she said it. Like, so what does it mean?
5x5 what? It's 5x5 what? 5x5 what?
Like, are we talking about drywall here?
Radios, man.
What? Oh my God.
5x5. See, the road to Tenerin.
These are the best conversations where it just goes wherever we want to go. So, are you two twins?
No, she's my doppelganger.
And how long have you been doppelgangers of each other? Your entire lives or just like only the last 5 years?
Yeah, I think our whole lives, right? You know, at birth, you know, you just showed up and... It's an eternal doppelganger.
So I first met you, oh goodness, at least 5 years ago, if not longer, maybe six, at the Rest in Peace Rome Renaissance Revels, which when it was at the Art and Community Center. I think that's where I first met you. And that little stage that was often like that hidden garden in the back. Yeah, so that's where I think I first met you too.
It was very mystical.
Now was that your first Renaissance fair?
I think we played the Mayfair once, I think.
All right. Mayfair before on the Green?
That, yeah. That year, right? Wasn't it? Yeah.
So, in addition then to performing at Mayfair on the Green and the Rome Renaissance Revels, do you now do other Ren Fairs?
We did the MPCC one that year. We did the Royalty Rogues. We're looking to doing some others as
so
well.
So you work a lot for the Tim Parker shows.
Yeah, and we're looking at some others, but we're kind of waiting to hear back, and so we're not sure exactly yet.
All right. So when did you start as a sister act?
Was it 10 years ago now? I think right, because we started writing songs together. We didn't start playing out right away. We just wrote songs together, and then we once we had like a certain amount of songs written, we started playing out a little bit.
Okay. And so, what's your songwriting process like? Does one of you write lyrics and the other does the music? Do you both do music, both lyrics?
We do both. We both kind of sure write the guitar part. And then I'll do the vocal melody, and then we'll both write the lyrics together, and so it's kind of like a collaborative, kind of like we're connected, that twin telepathy,
mystical twin telepathy. Thing, yeah.
See, you two are giving me hope. My twin nieces, who we call the twin sesses, they are two right now. They are each other's best friend, which I think when you're two, you don't really have that many options. But I'm hoping it kind of goes this way, of they stay joined at the hip, or at
connected.
Least by telepathy, well into the future, and possibly just jointly run for president. The earliest opportunity, so I think there'll be, when the way things work out, I think they'll be about like 38 or 39. So they could be the youngest co-president of the United States ever. Yeah. Combined age of, what would that be, 76?
So, yes, that would
be like, oh, no, together. We have a lot of experience. So
a lot of mischief and mayhem. Twins, twins and double
minds.
Yeah, if civilization still exists at that point.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, because global warming's not real. It's a conspiracy brought on by the great big Eastern syndicates.
Just like being pursued by a bear.
No, yeah, that's a fallacy. Yeah, there was no bear. No, it was actually a large gay man named Clive just running after you. That's what happened.
And it makes more sense.
Yeah, see, seriously, it's like pursued by a bear. It's Clive. And then what is not written into the script is the entire audience at that point, because they know Clive. I mean, he's a staple of London theatre at the time.
Friendly neighbourhood thespian.
Yeah, exactly. He, the clown runs off stage being pursued by a bear, and here comes Clive, and everybody just goes, Clive!
And clowns deserve it.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you gotta throw a bone to the man sometimes.
Yes, clowns deserve it.
And that is exactly how it happened. Any high schoolers who are writing a paper on where does the stage direction exit pursued by a bear come from? That is it, right there. It's Winter's Tale, and you should go check it out right now. Don't read it. Trust me, just perform it and find a friend named Clive. Now. So, I'm by the way, we're recording this in Barnes & Noble, so audience, I don't know if you're actually picking it up that much, but we have some fantastic background music right now. At the moment, a track from The Greatest Showman, which was my favorite film of last year, was it? Or the year before, but that was great. I loved it.
This is my favorite song.
The scene,
just the way they did the scene.
It's hard for me to pick a favorite. I love that scene, though.
The tightrope is my favorite aspect.
Walking the tightrope?
Yeah, it was cool.
The acrobatics.
It's hard to beat that opening song, though. We're introducing the whole circus life. I mean, that's
carnival-esque. Yes,
and then Come Alive, and then the song that they all sing when he shuts the door on them, and they're going out into the world and they're singing, "This is me." Ah, that was so great.
Just
love it.
Very intense.
Look out, 'cause here I come. If It doesn't sound like they're playing the rest of the soundtrack, so it's just on kind of random right now. But if it comes back, I'm going to start singing along. You are warned, and audience, you are really warned.
I shall wait with bated breath.
Oh. So, how did you get into performing live?
I started out doing acting and musicals and musical theater and a lot of singing. I didn't write songs then, but I did mostly like a lot of musical theater mm-hmm. songs, a little bit of classical, some pop rock. And then you started playing guitar, and then we thought, hey, let's do something together, something different and unique, and write songs together that, you know, something we could just do, use our different abilities. And, you know, she did a lot of writing too, if you want to talk to, I know you did a lot of writing. So then we thought we could just combine those things and do it together.
Yeah.
Yeah, combine our Jedi prowess.
Together you make a really intimidating Jedi master. Like, which of you is the Padawan? I need to know.
I think... What do you think? It changes, but she is the bossy... I'm bossy. Right?
So you're the master.
She is... Bossy pants, extraordinary.
Bossy pants. That's what I call my one niece. She is bossy. She tells me what to do, and I show up, and she's like, "Do this." I'm like, "All right, I will," because you're two, and you don't understand that I have my own life. So, when you're three, things are gonna change. Well, right now you're two, so it's fine.
Yeah, like Vampire Diaries, like she's Damon, and I'm Stefan. So she calls me Stefan Bossy Pants. I'm the snarky one.
Yeah, that's me. I'm the snarky one. That's where I live. Yeah. My wife asks me, is my entire life lived by snark? I'm like, no, of course not. And then other people notice it, and they're like, you are just a really snarky person. I'm like, am I? I thought I was just making a comment. No.
It's an observation.
It's just me living my life, isn't it? And they're like, no.
It's a quip.
So
I'm quippy.
So you've mentioned the Vampire Diaries now. In addition to being fans of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is it just all vampire fandom for you?
Except I like vampires. The only fandom that I don't like as much is Twilight.
Yeah, no one does.
Yeah, no. But they're not real vampires. I don't see them as real vampires.
The sparkly.
They don't burn in the sunlight. They don't live in the real vampire.
Yeah, but other than that, yeah, we love vampires.
Speaking of vampires and burning in sunlight, have you seen What We Do in the Shadows?
I saw the movie.
That's what I'm talking about.
They're making a show, right, I think.
Are they really?
I heard, I don't know. But yeah, it was funny.
Taika Waititi, if you're listening, and I know you are, you need to call me. You and Jemaine Clement, you need to call me. I'm Shakespeare, I can write for you, or I can be in it. Or I could just sit on set and be snarky.
I
can
see
you.
That would be grand.
You see? Yeah. I could be the snarky friend.
It'd be fitting.
Yeah, just like, and this is Shakespeare, he's just here, and it's like, oh, Shakespeare a vampire? No, he's just over there. We let him be here. He's snarky. We enjoy him. I'm like, hey, how you doing? Just be weird. Yeah. Now, how did you get involved with Tim Parker in the beginning? To start performing at these Renaissance festivals?
I played a show with John Costello and Tim Parker.
Oh, John Costello. Excellent. Fantastic artist.
Montaigne. And I kind of got to know him through that. And kind of started talking more, and he messaged us, wanting us to get more involved with them.
That's exactly how working with Tim works. Show,
Traveled back in time by TARDIS.
He's just like, hey, I would like you to do things. And you're like, all right, cool.
Of course, he's helped us build a new sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
I have not seen the new series of Doctor Who yet. Does her sonic work on wood? Because it looks kind of woody.
It's bollocks, yes. No. Still bollocks, doesn't work on wood.
Damn.
Don't diss the Sonic.
No. It swivels there, and that's pretty snazzy.
It is. It's definitely very, very unique, and I think it's stylish.
I've loved... Since they started Who... Seriously, we are really not talking about our work right now. We're just like, let's just talk about this movie now, and that TV show. since they restarted Who back in 2005, I think it was, with Christopher Eccleston, I've loved all the Sonics. I think all of them in their own way are great. Like that first one, like it had a little periscope action, and then Matt Smith had the claw, and then Capaldi's second one did that cool pulsing thing. Oh, I love
the
it.
The sunglasses. The Sonic sunglasses.
The Sonic sunglasses were so dumb. If you liked it, I apologize, but I thought they were so dumb. Like you want to, it's like you want to wear sunglasses. You go right ahead, homeboy. But the thing themselves are dumb.
Is he protecting himself from UV?
No,
I don't know. Is it a secret vampire?
Well, yeah, it's the UV lights.
The episode where they were going against the monks. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was a several episode arc where he was going against the monks and he sent himself a message, like a virtual reality version of him sent real version of himself a message, like did uploaded it to the Sonics. To the Sonic Shades.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the only purpose I saw for them. Other than that, I'm like,
they're kind of
stupid. Yeah, this is stupid.
Cute.
This is dumb. So, excuse me, I'm gonna cough, I'm gonna pause. And because I have a pause button, listener, you didn't hear that. Also, I could have just edited it out. You wouldn't know. They're laughing. They're being very kind.
That's writing out cursing and everything right now.
So, which of you is the elder, Jennifer or Jessica?
Sort of. I guess I'm the elder twin. Yeah, through natural birth, I would have been first. She would have come
because,
up.
Yeah.
I should be the oldest.
I should be
She's
older.
She's like, it's the curse of the Caesarean birth.
I was also Caesarean.
If she came out first, but I would have.
So... Is
the technicality.
Is that why you're bossy pants?
It's a possibility.
I'm still the rebellious animal.
Oh,
you're
my
the troublemaker. Yes,
oh,
I was.
That is fantastic. So you caused your parents trouble?
I was the troublemaker.
Did you ever try to switch places? Because you bear more than a passing resemblance to each other. Did you ever masquerade as each other?
We've masqueraded as each other
in school, yeah.
Yeah. Switch classes.
And take tests for each other? Or was it just mess with people?
To mess with our teachers. And it's fun. It was like 12th night.
Only both the same gender in this
yes.
case. Yeah.
Samples!
Oh my goodness, we're getting samples! What is everything over here?
So the latte is our cinnamon cookie latte, and we have Cinnabon cheesecake.
I can have none of this because I am completely lactose intolerant, but I appreciate the offers. What is your name?
My name is Jenna.
Lords and ladies, Jenna from Barnes & Noble just came over offering samples. So, Jenna, you're guesting on the Shakespeare Approves of this podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Jenna.
Welcome to the Mad Tea Party.
I love it. Mad Tea Party, and I'm bringing lattes.
All right. Jenna is offering lattes. You don't get any, though, because you're listening to this in the future. We're talking to you from the past, and they are having snacks in the past. But it's our present. But it's your past. Our future. Currently the past. Wibbly wobbly.
Tiny
wimey. Is it good though? The latte.
It's quite good.
Excellent, yeah. I've recently had to go vegan.
It's delectable.
Because lactose. It's
lactokinesis?
Yeah, seriously. I can't. There's pain. So much pain. So I can't do it anymore. So, yeah. Yeah, so now I was already a vegetarian, so. So there's that.
So kind of. Fits the theme, I guess.
Yeah, there you have it. There it just all goes. I'm just like, all right, cool. I miss pizza.
You can't do cheese either.
I'm sorry?
Can you do cheese?
No.
No, nothing.
Because, nothing. No goat cheese either, feta, no mozzarella, none of that. There are very good vegan alternatives for a lot of it. There's like, Daiya makes some really good cheese alternatives. Chow, which is from a field roast, makes some really good stuff. There's lots of good alternatives out there.
The tram too. They have the tram on Tina. They have a lot of. They had a lot of vegan.
They offer, and I think a lot of the brands they use are the brands I like. So it's good stuff. When are they reopening?
I'm not sure yet.
Is it a week? Is it still a week from never?
I'm not sure yet. Hopefully, I know they're renovating, so hopefully.
Yeah, and this part might be cut out. So I don't want to talk ill of them. But come on.
Hopefully, I heard it maybe in May, but I'm not sure.
All right.
Speaking of the tram, I just remembered the name of John Costello's band, the Tweed Band. That was the band we played with.
The Tweed Band.
Tim Parker and John Costello.
Were they all wearing tweed?
They were. Yes, they were wearing. Donning pretty tweed cool. garments.
It works.
It was madness.
It holds.
It's quite elegant.
I accept this logic.
Yes. Right. There was an elegant discourse of music, attire, very eloquent, elegant, all in one.
What type of music were they doing?
It was kind of, I think it was very artistic, highbrow, and but a bit of a rock tinge, I think, rock.
Highbrow rock.
Yeah, because it was, that's kind of, a good description for it.
That is...
A bit on the...
That's something.
It was really unique. A little bit jazzy twinge to it. Nuance to it.
So, how would you describe your sound? Sometimes I would say it's ethereal. Sometimes kind of Celtic-ish. What would you say?
I think more acoustic. I think it's. I would say that it's definitely ethereal quality.
Mystical.
Very mystical.
Fantasy.
Haunting. Fantastical.
And how did you land? And how did you land on that?
Well, we have a lot of different influences, and I feel like we're influenced by a lot of different things. I was influenced by some classic rock. I listened to a lot of Pink Floyd, The Doors, The Beatles.
What about Fleetwood Mac? Because I feel like sometimes
yes, that too. Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, there's some Stevie Nicks in a couple of songs you do. There's a very Stevie.
Yeah. My dad made that comparison before.
Yeah. And then I also did some theater, musicals, and then Disney too, Little Mermaid, and there's and the Disney movies, and then. Then some symphonic metal too.
Classic literature is a big influence. Literature and fantasy.
Like Nightwish.
Symphonic metal.
Alright, so going into classic literature, have you ever read Jane Eyre?
Mm-hmm.
Alright.
Yeah, it was one of the favorites.
Do you have a song dedicated
to
Heathcliff on the Moors?
Heathcliff. We have a song dedicated Heathcliff for Wuthering Heights, and
I said Jane Eyre. I meant Wuthering Heights.
But we actually have a story for Jane Eyre too. We had a girl that a fan that liked our music that lived out in Lena was her name. She lived out in Maine and discovered us on I think it was iTunes. And she actually, we started talking a lot. And she asked if we'd write a song based on her favorite novel, which was Jane Eyre. So then we wrote a song called Rochester's Undying Love, which was based on Rochester and Jane Eyre. Yeah.
I was gonna say I was gonna cut you off and say you should call it Dear Mr. Rochester.
Same way. Dear, yes. We're connected.
Excellent. Friends, we're going to take a pause for some questionably real advertisements. Friends, join your friendly neighborhood Shakespeare at the Philadelphia Renaissance Fair this weekend, May 11 and 12th, at historic Fort Mifflin. At the New Jersey Renaissance Fair in Bordentown, New Jersey, May 18th and 19th, May 25th and 26th, and June 1st and 2nd. At the Capital District Renaissance Fair in Albany, New York, on June 8th and 9th. Also join me for Bard After Dark, The Shakespeareans. One night only on May 25th at 7 p.m. on the grounds of the beautiful New Jersey Renaissance Fair in Bordentown, New Jersey. Tickets available at njrenfair.com. And now, back to the show. All right. Favorite movie version of Jane Eyre? Go.
Okay, I've seen That's really hard because none of them have made me like completely happy. Mm-hmm. But I did like the because I like
Michael Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender, I think he's
all right.
cute.
All right. Yep.
So yeah. Right. So I did like his Rochester, but
I understand,
movie,
but you're wrong. All right.
Movie is a little dry.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I like him, and I liked that. Kind of liked even though I know the BBC one was maybe not as accurate, but it was exciting.
Was that the one with Samantha Morton and Serena?
It was with it was one with oh my gosh, what was her name? Oh my gosh. She was tell me out. What's his name?
Toby Stevens.
Oh.
But yeah, it wasn't yes. it's I liked it. It's altered, longer, so they you know, cut as
wrong.
Altered the script.
You're still wrong.
there's another version.
I've seen all of them.
The one with
great, but I can't remember some of the
one from Penny Dreadful.
Is that the one with Ciarán Hinds?
No. No, it's the one from the 70s. Who's in Doctor Who? Which one was
I don't know this one.
Which one was it?
It was actually more of a semi-stage version.
Oh,
but
so it was on a bad set.
But it was...
Wait, Wuthering Heights, they made a BBC like version in the 60s. Because Wuthering Heights, I saw like all the movies.
Yeah.
The actor from Penny Dreadful that plays...
I've never seen Penny Dreadful.
It's one of my favorite shows too. It's kind of it's very dark,
but I'm so hard
macabre.
On the I'm so hard on the movies though. It's like,
yeah, I'm not really pleased with any of the film versions because I don't think they depict Jane Eyre truly in a very fleshed out light. I think it's just I think they always just simplify her character in the film versions.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I'm looking for something for you real quick on my phone. All right, the 1997 Jane Eyre is what you want to watch.
What is it?
All right, 1997. We are all gathered around my iPhone, dear listeners. The 1997 Jane Eyre, starring Samantha Morton as Jane and Ciarán Hinds as Mr. Rochester.
Oh, Ciarán Hinds is a great actor.
Yeah, it's the one my wife loves, and it is really good.
Samantha Morton.
Yeah, Samantha Morton is Jane, Ciarán Hinds as Mr. Rochester.
He's a good actor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he's
grand. He's intense, and he's definitely a consummate actor.
Yeah, here is my impression of his Mr. Rochester. Jane! No! And scene. No, I haven't. Thank you. Now, Wuthering Heights, you have Heathcliff is a pervert. That's the song. You know it's true. You're laughing because you know it's true. It's not like you're not laughing at him of embarrassment. Heathcliff is a pervert.
He's such a devious. He's a
and he's a drama queen.
He can be a drama queen.
And he's a pervert. He digs up a body.
He's a what? He's a panty sniffer. What?
He digs up a body and snogs it. I need to put that out there. He digs up a decomposing corpse.
Necrophilia, I know.
And snogs it.
He snogs a corpse.
That's true.
But it's so that is there's something macabre and gothic in that. It's like an underground Poe story.
And Poe is also a pervert. I'm putting that out there.
I can't deny that.
Poe married his cousin. His underage cousin. Let us remember this, ladies and gentlemen.
Twisted mind. Tortured and sexy at the same time.
Tortured and sexy? That's not sexy. That is statutory. That is you go to jail.
No, not him. No, Heathcliff.
Yeah. Oh, Heathcliff?
No, not that.
Oh, no.
No,
oh, no. No, we're not defending that. No. Heathcliff. Oh, yeah, I mean, that's fine.
Necrophilia is so salty.
It's illegal for a reason. I need to put that out there. People are gross. It is hard to argue that relationship is consensual at that point. Also, she's like his adopted sister and all that. And
yeah, it's like
strange.
Jamie and
strange
stuff.
I'm just putting that out there. It's messed up.
It is
dark.
Very
incestuous sheets.
I hated that book in high school. I hated it. I did a book report on it and I lied the entire time because I could not get myself to read it. Just like
it's so good though. And it's like one of my favorites.
And I was not able to bluff my way through it. It
couldn't
was
take a ramble on the morals.
She was like, nope.
It's so good.
I know you have not read this. I'm like,
so twisted.
Sure.
So twisted.
It makes it dark and fascinating. And the idea.
I love that a woman wrote it too in that time period.
It's certainly
it's
an interesting character study, that's for sure.
She wasn't afraid to,
I love that Kathy is flawed too.
It's tempestuous.
Makes you wonder though. what was going on at that Bronte household?
Oh, like, yeah, they're
what
sure
kind of mental trauma are all of them doing?
Must be extremely
tempestuous. They were in Wildfell Hall too, and Bronte. Yeah. So they kind of had some
But suffering
stuff going
is
on
yeah.
in there too. The one character, Huntington, could probably be compared the most to Rochester and Heathcliff. You know, because that kind of flawed character.
I'm just putting out there.
Suffering.
The Brontes had terrible parents. I'm just making this thesis statement, letting it ride. Come at me, English professors.
Conjures up a true artist. Suffering is the raw stuff of art.
Yeah, it's like, but here's the thing. Suffering is the raw stuff of art is not a new concept. I mean, it certainly goes back quite a few centuries. Were their parents like, you know what? Let's make at least one artist in the family. Let's mentally abuse our daughters.
Let's make them suffer.
Create the aesthetic.
Maybe they will create some amazing artwork that they will not be appreciated for in their lifetimes.
We have to create the aesthetic. We have to. We're doing this for the aesthetic.
Oh.
We're sacrificing our parenting.
Oh, my Lord. Just another terrible people. Terrible people. Oh, my God. God. So where are you all performing next? I mean, hopefully not over the, like, don't give me anything in the next 2 week time frame, because this is not going to go out until the end of the month.
We would have setting up some things. Originally we would have had a show in the city next week, but
New York City,
but it may not be till later now.
New York City or Syracuse? Please don't say Syracuse.
New York
City.
All right. We might be having a show later on now in the spring.
Excellent. Where at?
I'm not sure now because she has to set it up, but originally it would have been at Muchmore's.
All right. May I recommend to you to contact, in Brooklyn, The Way Station.
The Way Station.
It is a hipster bar with a lot of steampunk aesthetic and more than a little bit Doctor Who flavoring. In fact, the restroom is a TARDIS.
Oh, that's awesome. So happy.
And it is bigger on the inside. Like, legit. It's bigger on the inside. The cocktails are all named after different Sonics. So, it is a very nifty place. I'm actually hoping to perform there sometime later this year myself.
Sounds epic.
It will be amazing.
And it's bigger on the inside.
Well, the bar itself is actually really small, because, it's Brooklyn, and, space is at a premium. goodness. Are you performing at any Renaissance fairs this year? Yeah, that's the Way Station right
Sweet.
There. Yeah. Go contact them.
Will you run into Daleks there?
I can't say you won't.
We're playing at the Mayfair. We have that schedule.
Mayfair on the Green.
That's, what is it, May 18th, 19th?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so we're in the process of booking things right now. So.
Excellent. And then are you going to be doing the Capital District Renaissance Fair?
I don't know yet.
All right.
So waiting to hear. She's checking
she was
on
interested.
Something. She was interested, but she's checking on something. So.
Excellent, good.
I
would love to see you there.
Most likely we'll be traversing the time space continuum.
And when is your next album coming out?
We're going to start recording next month.
Mm-hmm.
Some new stuff. So,
how many albums do you have right now?
We have three.
That's fantastic.
So we're hoping to start within
conjure
a few
up
weeks.
Some conjure up some sound alchemy.
Where do you record?
Right now I'm recording with the Shane. Shane Reed, so. But in the past,
is it like in a home studio? Or?
It's a home studio. So
we've recorded
in the past. You recorded with Phil.
Tracy's.
Yeah, Phil at Tracy's. And we also recorded at Subcats in Skinny Atlas. And also with Lyman in Clinton.
Okay.
And what was it called, the studio?
Gecko's?
Gecko Studio?
Yeah.
Gecko Studio.
And we actually just finished a photo escapade.
Yeah.
A photo shoot, actually. So.
Yeah, we just did a photo shoot, and we're doing more photo shoots and also a couple other things.
What's that going to be for?
The photo shoot that we actually just concluded. It's actually going to be in playing cards, kind of a Alice in Wonderland-esque sword-wielding warrior.
Is that does that go along with that those mad tea party pictures I saw the other day? Excellent.
Because that was actually, we have a song called Jack of Hearts that coincides with card imagery. And so we'll probably, we'll be painting red roses.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Painting rose bushes, crimson, beheading people.
So we're going to be closing out with one of your tracks. What track are we closing out with? You can just talk about it. I'll fit it in. It doesn't have to be diegetic.
Okay. We're thinking of.
You had a couple in mind.
We had a couple in mind, so whatever you decide to start
right.
it.
All right.
Do you want to do the one first and then the other?
Yeah, just tell me. Just tell me what they are.
Okay. The one was Blind Man's Bluff. Do you want to do the three that we're thinking of? Okay. The one is Blind Man's Bluff.
All right.
That one is kind of Renaissance fairish, and that's from our first album, so it's an older song. It was the third one we wrote together.
I feel like I'm finishing your sandwiches right now.
And that one has because it's kind of more of a love song, a little bit tragic love song towards the end. It starts out more innocent.
More somber at the end.
And then gets more somber towards
star-crossed lovers.
It also has Romeo and Juliet influences. And with that song, how that came about, do you want me to say? She was looking through my diary and thought, hey, let's write a song based on, this boy that,
I'm gonna write a song based on your heartbreak.
Yeah.
And my invasion of privacy.
I'm a voyeur. Yes, I am
pretty
a voyeur.
She's like, I don't know. And then, so a lot of the beginning is very innocent. Then towards the end is because, this person I kind of started talking to me later on. So the other one is a little more like, the darker, less.
Yeah, it's like, I think innocent.
Loss of innocence.
Loss of innocence and the sanguine hope of youth, I think.
Yeah, and expectations and
romanticized, notions of the heart, I guess. There's also kind of cool because... Oh, God.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Keep talking.
As we've been a... We actually do... This is kind of that has that knightly theme, the courtly motif of knightly love, the knight and his fair maiden kind of theme, Romeo and Juliet influence.
As created in the courts of love of Henry of Anjou and Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Splendid.
Random bit of historical knowledge right there. Okay. I'm not just a pretty face.
It's very fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Just a fun little diatribe if you want to go on it. Historical reference points here. Speaking of courtly love and the knight and his lady, and the like, it never necessarily becomes physical, but is always just passionate and done through letters and poetry. Started in the reign of Henry II of England, Henry of Anjou. They had the Angevin Empire, which England was just a part of it, it wasn't the seat of it. And he and his wife, Eleanor of Aquitaine, they had a steamy, tempestuous love. At one point, he locked her in a prison for like 15 years. Excuse me, I'm going to sneeze. And you didn't hear me sneeze, dear listener. And I might have edited that out. You don't know. Or when I hit pause, I'm going to sneeze again. I did not sneeze again.
It's the pixie dust. Stardust.
But they set up, Eleanor set up. If Henry has his court with all the knights and the lords and all that, and no women were being allowed, she had her own alternative court. It was all the ladies and everything was very refined. And so she started bringing in poets and writers and minstrels and performers of all stripes to really explode the art scene at the time. And the idea of courtly love developed there because in order to woo one of her ladies, you couldn't just be good on a horse and knocking other guys off their horses. and whatnot. You had to be refined. You had to be learned and be cultured. And so you started, by extension, seeing literacy explode throughout France and parts of England in this time period. And this is where you start getting some of the legends that are passed out now, such as Robin Hood. Richard and John were two of their sons. So Richard the Lionheart and John Lackland, and John being the king that went against Robin Hood and all that with the Sheriff of Nottingham. That all comes about in this period because the bards were becoming huge at this point. So if you want to do a D&D campaign, set it in, what would that be, 12th century France and England, because it's like, oh, that's where it all comes from. That and Tolkien. So
that's cool. So
it comes from that area, yeah. And they had the Lord Marshal, John Marshal, and he was the chief knight for many kings, for Henry, and then also for Eleanor as her champion, and then for Richard and for John. And it's just a period of, even though the actual reality on the field was quite a bit different, the expectation was we will hold ourselves to a certain standard. We will...
Refinement.
Yeah, we eloquent. Will be refined and eloquent and...
discourses.
Civilized. Reality was entirely 100% different. It was, I'm going to smack you in the face with this hammer. And if you live, good for you. But the ideal was a bit higher. And it's an amazing period. And I'm not doing it justice right here, but... So, Courtney Love, you talk
fascinating.
About.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So, where can they find you on social media?
We're on Facebook and also Reverb Nation.
Ooh, Reverb Nation.
And we're also, we have our music on iTunes and CD Baby.
Excellent.
And Amazon.
All right. If you had to pick just one of your three albums, which one would you pimp out? Like, which one's your favorite? I know, I'm asking you to choose your children right now.
What would you say? I do, I like Herons for the concept, but also I like the new one because it's, or the third one because it's newer.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you are most recently in your art. Of course.
So would you agree?
So the newest one is called what?
The Siren and the Beast.
The Siren and the Beast.
Based on one of her songs.
Go download that on CD Baby and iTunes. Go support them on Reverb Nation. Find them on Facebook. They are Ophelia's Looking Glass. Once again, thank you to the Lawrence sisters, Jessica and Jennifer, of Ophelia's Looking Glass for joining me, your friendly neighborhood Shakespeare, here on Shakespeare Approves of this podcast. Upcoming guests are going to be including Three Pints Shy and Pieces of Eight. Make sure that you follow Ophelia's Looking Glass on social media, and also follow me. On Instagram, I can be found at shakespeare.approves. Twitter, I'm at shakesapproves. Facebook, shakespeareapproves. And also, you can join my Patreon, patreon.com/shakespeare, if you want more madness in your life from me. We're going to go out with a song from Ophelia's Looking Glass, Blind Man's Bluff.
It was a romantic scene from long ago. I doubt you remember. You were a boy then, the saintly prince of fools. You took my hand. clown. I thought you were mad as a hatter. I guess the joke was on me. I fell for your offbeat charm. Dance with your Juliet, palm to palm is Lily Palmer's kiss. Stay in Neverland, I'll be your naked nymph. It's an actor's mind.
I love you, you love me. There is mutual, glorious affection.